Today's daf in Masechet Eruvin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Daled. And what we learned yesterday was that we had this interesting story. In order to be matir, walking back into the tchum, for someone who had left the tchum, so there was this amazing idea that we would make a mechitza of people, and that way it would be as if he was in a deer or a sahar, and then he would be able to walk back in. And the way that we understood the question was that it was actually a combination of issues. He was able to get up to within two amas of his tchum, and since, as we're going to be seeing later today, Rav Eliezer is matir if you're within two amas, because the tchumim overlapped to that small extent. So because of that, once he got up to there, then he was allowed to continue. This is how it was that Rav Nachman ended up being matir. So explained Rav. Today, we have a shaila about whether that's really mutter, because it turns out that what Rav Nachman was saying to do was to make a mechitza on Shabbos. Now, albeit you were making mechitza out of people, but the bottom line is you were matir making a mechitza on Shabbos. And the question is whether you're really ever allowed to make a mechitza on Shabbos. So, Eisvei Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak l'Rava. Nofal Dofna, guy is sitting in his sukkah. And there it is, on Yontav, he's sitting in his sukkah, and the wall of the sukkah collapses. So he's got this idea. He's going to ask somebody to stand up in the place where his wall collapsed, and then he'll be able to continue in his sukkah, right? No, can't do that. He can't ask a guy to stand there, and he can't put an animal there, and he can't put up kalim there, and he can't take his bed and pretend, okay, I need to put the bed up, you know, so he's going to put the bed up against the wall. And then he's going to have to, of course, he's going to have to put a sheet over it, because in those days, remember, the beds were essentially open from the bottom. So then, even though it looks like I'm not really building a wall, I'm just putting up my, he can't even play games so that it doesn't look like he's doing anything, right? Why? Because you're not allowed to make an oil aray from the beginning, b'tchilat. Because this over here, the whole wall fell down, and now he's making up a whole wall. You can't do that on Yontav, and kosher can, you can't do that on Shabbos. So then that means that Reb Nachman was telling him to do an Isser. He told Reb Chista to go ahead and to make a mechitza, albeit using humans. But so what over here? It also talks about using humans for the wall of your sukkah. This is its Isser. Omar Lein, so Reb said, very good, very good. I like your thinking, you know. You found a nice brisa. Let me show you a nice brisa, okay? You pull out your sword, I pull out my sword. Atamrit miha, anamina lechamiha. So I'm going to show you another brisa that says the exact opposite. Ose adam et chaveiro dofen. You can make your friend a wall of a sukkah. That's pretty much what I was saying, right? Kadesh yochal v'yishtev v'yishan, so that you'll be able to sleep in your sukkah. And you'd be allowed to take a bed and put it up, and you would be able to then spread a sheet over it. And you can do this also, kadesh lo tipol chama ala meit ve'ala ochlin, if we want to make sure that the sun shouldn't fall on a maize or on food, which would cause spoiling and decay of the maize. So you see over here that you can use a person. It says beferish, and you can make it on Shabbos. Okay, fine. Right, so now we got a problem. Good heavens. So we have two brises that say exactly the opposite. I mean, I appreciate the fact that you are able to disprove me from this brisa, but you're not answering the problem here. What do we do with the fact that there's a contradiction? Says the Gemara, there's no contradiction. It's really very simple. Don't you remember our sugya back in Shabbos about a shutter? Remember, we had the whole big machlokas. You have a shutter over a window. According to Rabbi Eliezer, you are not allowed to use that shutter unless it's permanently connected with a chain or a string to the window. It doesn't ever get to the ground. So then, basically, you're opening and closing it the way you would open and close the door to your house, right? Okay, so you're pulling it up a little bit. But the point is, it's there permanently. It's part of the house. But to take a shutter from the ground and to lift it up and to put it into a window, even though that's obviously not permanent, I mean, you don't intend to lose your window, nonetheless, he says you're not allowed to do that. Bashenken Rabbanan say you don't need to have a pkakachalon needs to be hanging. You can just bring it up and put it on. That's exactly the issue over here. So the first brisa that says that you cannot even put up a person in that place. You can't put up the bed. That's going like Reb Eliezer. And the other brides that it says that you can is going Kohen Rabbanan. And I understand what, like, it's, this is a big chiddush to you. That's not, remember, we had all the way back in Shabbos, near the end of the Masechet, it says over there, Kakachalon, Reb Eliezer Omer, if the shutter is attached to the building and it's hanging next to the window, it's not on the ground. So then Reb Eliezer says, then and only then you're allowed to shutter it. But if it's not, and it's on the ground, even if it's attached, this is no good. And ain't bo kikimbo, it makes absolutely no difference. Because what you're doing over here is you're being meisif temporarily to something, and that's mutter. So we could say that according to Rabbi Eliezer, he would also say that you can't put up even your shutter, you can't put up a wall, even though it's temporary, in order to use your sukkah. That's fine. That was the first price. So when I'm a chiv, to go like Rabbi Eliezer, we were passing over here with Nachman, was going like the Rabbim, obviously. So the Chachomim would say that you're allowed to close the shutter and even to lift it up from the ground. So they would say you're allowed to ask a guy to stand around in your sukkah. And by the same token, Reb Sheshes was allowed to tell the people that, Reb Chista rather was allowed to tell the people that they could make this machitza in order to allow Nechemiah Bachachiboy to get back in, right? No, not right at all. What's the matter with you? We don't remember that Amar Rabba Bar Bachanan, Reb Yochanan, about that whole machlokas that nobody held, not the Reb Eliezer, not the Chachomim, everybody's made it. You can't make a new thing. The only question is over here whether you can, if the house is already there and you're just putting in the shutter. And here we're talking about making a new thing, right? And there Reb Yochanan said, Akomodim she'enosim al aroi, even in al aroi, and even on Yontif, Koshke not Shabbos, you're not allowed to make it lechatchila, bitchila, meaning now this is the first time I made it. So the only machlokas over there was adding to that which was already there. I have a house. Now the question is, I'm adding a shutter in the window to the house. No. So over there, Reb Eliezer says, even that you're not allowed to do. And even on Yontif, you're not allowed to do that. Unless it was mamish fastened permanently, and it would be similar to open and closing a door. And over there, that's on Yontif, Koshken on Shabbos. The Chachomim say, no, even on Shabbos, Koshken on Yontif. You're allowed to do that because the only issue is to start from scratch. You're not starting from scratch. So that has nothing to do with our sugya. Your mom is doing it from scratch. You made the people there. You're sitting in the middle of nowhere. I understand how you're matir anything. And the case of the sugya, I also don't understand how you're saying that over here. Because, I mean, we're putting up over here a new sugya wall. You said the sugya wall fell down. So you're putting up a new wall. You're putting up a new wall, so then that's not a hosafa. True. Okay, wait a second. There's another way to explain. What we could say is that the braita that says that you can put it up on your sukkah wall on Yontav, that's going al libet Rabbi Yehuda. I'm sorry, al libet Rabbi Meir. And the braita that says, it's also going al libet Rabbi Yehuda. Where's that machlokas? Machlokas is benogea. There's a braita benogea, the dinim of sukkah. If you make a behema, a wall for a sukkah, so then Rabbi Meir says that's no good. Now, remember that there was an issue. We had a question of what the svar of Rabbi Meir is, that Rabbi Meir says you need to make a wall out of, one approach was, out of simple classical physics. You can't make a wall that is an emergent wall. And a living thing is an emergent wall. You have any idea how to make that? You can fix it? So it's Oymed Ez Beruach. It's basically magic. As far as you're concerned, a living entity is magic. The moment the life goes out of it, plop, there goes your wall. Okay, so go make a wall. Ha ha ha. That was one approach, which is brilliant, right? It's not really a wall. It's not even there. Okay. But the other approach was that wasn't the issue. And the issue was that if you take something and it's going to move around, so you can't call that a wall. Something that is itself, it moves. So how could that be a wall? So that's the way we're assuming over here is the pshat. That Rabbi Meir is posel using an animal for a wall of a sukkah because it moves around. Fine. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says as long as it's there, it's there. So now let's see if we can do that. So according to Rabbi Meir, if Rabbi Meir says that over there, if you make a sukkah wall out of an animal, it's no good. So you see that he holds that doesn't give it a din of a mechitza, right? Because in terms of the sukkah, it needs to be a mechitza that's defined as a mechitza for the sukkah. But over here, it would be mutter if you have a wall that fell down and you just want to put a behemoth there. It's not going to be machshir the sukkah. So you could put it there because you're not doing anything, because you're not redefining the kashrus of the sukkah, because yod sukkah anyway is possible. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, who is makshir in the case of the sukkah wall, so then he holds that it's a really kosher mechitza, then if the wall fell down, then you wouldn't be allowed to do it, because then that would be the definition of making a wall, right? Yeah, come on, says the Gemara, that's it. What do you think that we're talking about over here, that we're saying, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir. What, Rabbi Meir was talking about a behema, okay? A behema obviously is going to move about. You can't say, excuse me, Ms. Moo, would you mind staying here until the end of the day because the sukkah has to be kosher until tonight? It's going to do you a lot of good. But what does that have to do with the case? We were talking about Adam, okay? Ask the Adam to stand there. Fine, she'll stand there. A kosher can't kill him. Well, you're just addressing one out of three of the cases. A behema, an Adam, and Caleb, and you're telling me, oh, we're going like Rabbi Meir says, behemoth's no good. What are you trying to do? Pull the wool over my eye? And besides that, the whole thing doesn't even make sense. Because, I mean, Lamaisa, we're not arguing over here about the question of Kachalon, right? I mean, that's an overall question. We're talking about over here the question of how an animal or human stacks up vis-a-vis the halacha of a mechitza. But what does Rabbi Meir hold? Tell me. What does Rabbi Meir hold about the question of the machlokas of kakachalon? Okay, Rabbi Meir is saying over here you're allowed to put up this temporary wall. Who's he going according to? I'll leave it to Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says you're not even allowed to add a shutter. You're not even allowed to add koshken. You're not allowed to make it. So then Rabbi Meir must be going, I'll leave it to Rabbanan, but that also doesn't work because the Rabbanan only said that you can go ahead and you can be mosif, you can add, so a shutter you can put in. We said before, you're not allowed to, even according to Chachamim, you can't make it from nowhere. So then it doesn't make sense to say that there's a connection between the two brises that are being chaylek to the machlokas of Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yonah, which has nothing to do with that issue. Okay, all right, forget it. Good. All right, there's another way to explain. How's that? Both brises, we could say, are going al libet Rabbanan, who say that you're allowed only to add, right? But you're not allowed to start from scratch. So the first brisa about kalim is not a contradiction. Why? Because that brisa, which says you can't put up your bed and use it as a sukkah wall, you know what it's talking about over there? That is talking about the third wall of the sukkah. The third wall of the sukkah is, in fact, making the sukkah kosher. A sukkah without a third wall is not a sukkah at all. So when you put up the third wall, that is considered to be making it from scratch, okay? So if I'm making it from scratch, then we said that's aser. According to Rabban and aser, you can only be mosif. But the other brisa, which says you are allowed to put up that, that's referring to just a fourth wall. So you want it to have some privacy. So according to Rabban, and you're allowed to add, and you're not starting from scratch. Now look, I need to tell you something, and that is Rashi. It's interesting. Rashi actually speaks this out in Yuma. And Rashi says, sometimes the Gemara will go through a very agonizing and ridiculous approach after approach after approach to a sugya where you know perfectly well that it makes absolutely no sense, even as you're reading it. And the reason the Gemara does this, says Rashi, is to teach you how to think and how it is that you need to structure your mind in such a way that all of the possibilities are considered. So it's basically a branching structure. Rashi over here doesn't explain his yesod, that that's the way the Gemara works, but he points out that this whole answer is ridiculous because we have to be talking about being machshir sukkah because it says beferish in the brisa in order to eat and sleep in your sukkah, right? And Rashi explains, of course we could have said that. Obviously. But the Gemara anyway is going to be working you through the different approaches. So don't let that worry you. In the end, we end up figuring out, because of our branching structure, that none of this works. So the fact that at this point your mind is raced ahead and you're saying, but wait a minute, that doesn't work. That's fine. Relax. Just hold on. We will get to it. But none of this is meant to stand. It's actually meant to be a process. Fine. Says the Gemara, that actually we could assume that this is true because if we read carefully, the first brayta says nafal dofna, its wall. What do you mean, its wall? That means the crucial wall, right? The wall, which was the third wall. And now it doesn't have the wall that makes it a sukkah, Okay, so Shema Amina, that first brisa was talking about the wall. And the wall, that's already a problem. Ashein kein, the brisa that says you're not allowed to put up, you are allowed to put up the bed, that just in order that the sun shouldn't hit the mace. Of course, we're conveniently ignoring the part that says in order to eat in your sukkah. Okay, fine. But conveniently ignoring that. So if we just look at the last part indeed says the issue over here is the difference between putting it up so that the food doesn't spoil and putting it up, like it says in the first one, in order to make a sukkah kosher, which is basically construction from the start. Okay, so now you've answered the kalim, I understand. But what in the world are you going to do about the human contradiction? The human contradiction is... Yikes. See what happens when you try drinking? A disaster. I'm soaking wet. All right. So the human contradiction is a problem because the first brisa contradicts the second brisa, right? First we say it's usher to have a person be a sukkah wall. And the second one says that you're allowed to eat and sleep in the sukkah because the person is there. So obviously he's being makshir the sukkah. So how do you explain that? No, that's not kasha either. Adam ha-adam, nami lo kasha. The difference is whether the person knows that he's being used as a wall or he doesn't know that he's being used as a wall. And that is the basis of the distinction. I just have water all over my screen, sorry. Okay.
Rebbe is physically challenged.
Yes. Thank you. So in other words, we're assuming that there's a major difference between the person who knows it. Why is it that that should make such a difference? Because basically, if you happen to use a person who just happens to be standing there, then there's no resemblance between that and a wall. Because a wall is something that is meant to be there. And over here, a person just happens to be there. He's walking to the makolet or whatever, and he's standing there talking to you. Is not aware of the fact that you're relying on him to eat in your sukkah. Fine. So then you didn't do anything at all. And that's okay. But when you ask the person to stand there and he puts his mind to it, then he essentially has turned himself into a wall. So that's the big difference. So if it's ladat, then it's usher. If it's lo ladat, then it's mutter. So basically, everything works out fine. So the Rabbanan say, you're allowed to make an oil aroi if it's not from scratch. Okay, so then we said, if it already has three walls, then it's not from scratch. Because it's a kosher sukkah, so you could put up a fourth wall. That's not a problem. If the sukkah needs a wall in order to be kosher, like here where you're eating and drinking in the sukkah, so then you're not allowed to use a kli in order to make that third wall. You would be allowed to use an adam who doesn't know that he's being used for that purpose. So even though you're not allowed to make something new, but since over here where you're using people who aren't aware that they're a wall, it's their awareness that turns them into a wall. And if they're not aware, so then there would be no problem. Okay, so now when we're talking about the case before Rabbi Nechemia, so I don't understand. What's the case of Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbi Chanloi, that Rabbi Nachman was mater Rabbi Nechemia to use this mechitza? I mean, I'm assuming that the people knew what they were doing over there, right? I mean, you're asking people to come out on Shabbos, you know, and in case you have an Erev and you're able to go out of the Tum and have enough people and whatever. I mean, apparently they knew. No, he made up some kind of thing. No, he pretended... There's a Karbach minion out there and they need to dance or whatever, and he gets them into a circle and they start dancing, and it's fine. But I understand, but Rav Chista knew, so how did Rav Chista start dancing? And Rav Chista was being used as part of the mechitza, and he knew he was playing this game. Well, it's like very often, you know, everybody gets everyone else to do things, but then they don't participate. So Rav Chista got everybody else to dance, and he sat there watching. So he did not form part of the mechitza. Okay. All right, so now we've got our pshat. Now, there were these guys that were making a Sheva Brachas on Shabbos, so they were Ganana, and they didn't have enough water, and they had, like, water from Rosh HaRabim, but they had no way to get it into Rosh HaYochid. So they went ahead, and they made, like, a dance. You know, they got everybody to stand around, and they carried the water from Rishis HaRabim into Rishis HaYachid using the people that were dancing for that purpose. And they knew that, yeah, it's nice chop. Anyway, Shmuel beat them all up. He said, Ima Omru, Shalom Idad. Listen here. I mean, the psak that we made was only where the people did not know that they were being used. They never were matir being used. There was a maisa once that there were these really expensive ziki are these leather water bottles, right? Skeins, anyway. They were Rava's personal things, and he had left them in the Ristika, the Mechuzah, which is like a public area. It's the public center, and so what it was out there on Shabbos, and it was clearly was going to be stolen. So when Rava came back from giving shir, there were always tons of people around Rava, and they were asking questions, you know, and everybody's walking back together. So Rava's Mishamish picks up the Ziki as they're walking, because there's people all over. So he picks them up, and he walks along with Rava through the Rishis HaRabim, surrounded by these people, until he gets to Rava's house, and thereby brought the Ziki in to the Rishis. So then the next Shabbos, when there were other things, he wanted to do the same thing. Rav was saying, you can't do it, because everybody's figured it out now, you understand? So everyone hopped what happened last week. Believe me, they're all talking about it. Whoa, what was he doing? Oh, he was using the people's mechitza. So now they understand that when they walk me back from Shir, they're creating Rishis HaYachid. He can't do it anymore. So the next week, he didn't let them, because then it would be Kiladat. Now, Levi once had someone bring in straw for him from Rishis HaRabim in this fashion. It's a one-time kind of thing if people don't know that they're being used in that purpose. Ziri brought back aspasta that he needed for his behemoths. Reb Shimi Bar Chiya brought back Maya. Anyway, these were all people who were giving shiurim, and there were people that were walking with them, so you can get away with this once, you know. Anyway, we're now up to our kapitan, and we are ready to continue. In order to understand this Mishnah, we need to know a fascinating halacha that we've actually learned before. This is a halacha that there was a special heter about people that came to be made for the new moon. So they gave a heter that you're allowed to go out of your tchum, and you could come to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. There's no question. Ben Shanira Ba'aliyo, Ben Shalonira Ba'aliyo, Machlokas, how clear the moon was. I mean, if you can assume that everybody saw it, would you really go anyway? Yes. You have to go anyway. And when you got to the Beis Din HaGadol and were made, so it used to be that you were stuck because you've been Yotzi Chutzutrum, and there you had your Arba Amos, you know, and then they brought you a little bottle of water or something, but, you know, you were in big trouble. Now, obviously, people did not exactly run to Yerushalayim to give their edus when they were going to have a miserable Shabbos sitting in one place. And so because of that, Reb Gamliel made a takana. And the takana was that someone who leaves the tchum in order to do a mitzvah, like the edus for the chaydash, or they're part of a fire department, and they needed to save someone's life, or they're soldiers and they're fighting an army, or a doctor has to deliver a baby, whatever, any kind of case like that, is the halacha is that when you went out to do a mitzvah, you get a tchum in that place of Alpayim Amos, as if you went out Bereshus. Okay. So now the question is, if you left Bereshus for one of those purposes, after the Takkanah of Rabbi Gamliel, and then you get a call on your monitor, you know, okay, the baby's already been delivered, you know, so all right. So now what? Or obviously any of the other things, Besim is already Mekadosh the Chodesh, your testimony is not necessary. Fine, whatever it was, and they tell him kvar naaseh maaseh. Okay, so then the deal is you still get that tchum of Alpayim Amos in every direction, wherever it is that you were informed about the fact that you don't need to go any further. So in other words, it's the going out in order to do the mitzvah that is that which gives you the right to having this new tchum. Okay. Now, the question is, very strange statement that is about to come up. If you were still within your original tchum, then it's as if you never left. I hope so. I didn't. Okay, well, the Gemara is going to ask that. What in the world is that supposed to mean? And the general rule is, kol hayotzim lahatzil, If the purpose of going out was as an emergency service crew, so you're an ambulance, or you're a fire department, or Mishmar HaGvul, whatever those issues are, it's not that you're given a new tchum, you're allowed to come back to your original tchum. Okay. So now, first the Gemara says, what do you mean? If you're in your original tchum, it's as if you never left your tchum. You didn't leave your tchum. What is that supposed to mean? Amar Rabba, what it means is that if you were within your original tchum, then not it's as if you never left your tchum, it's as if you never left your house. Meaning, if let's say that you extended now in a direction, your house was, let's say, 1,000 amas away, right? Okay, so now you're starting to go, and you're still within the 2,000 amas. So if you were given your new tchum, then you would start counting from there. You'd be able to go another 2,000 amas. You wouldn't be able to go past your house in the other direction, right? As if that was your Erev. So that's the Chiddush, right? So even though you left and you're now in a place, it's true you're still within a place you could have gotten to in the first place, but now we're telling you, and no, you shouldn't think you have a new tchum as if you have an Erev there. You have your house the way you had originally. Well, isn't that obvious? I mean, if you never left your house, why shouldn't you get your house? Because, look, you might have thought that the Chachamim said, if you go out to do a mitzvah, then the ruling is that wherever you get to at the point that you do that mitzvah or wherever you were told that you no longer need to go, it's the moment that you leave that we say, okay, your old tchum is no longer relevant. You are now going to be assigned a new tchum depending on where you get to. That's what you would have thought. In which case, it would be as if that's where your Mokam of Shvisa was, on the other side, far away from your house, and then you're still allowed to go to your house, obviously, because it's within 2,000 amas of your new place. But you wouldn't be able to go 2,000 amas in the other direction of your house, and you would be allowed to go 2,000 amas further than where you are in the opposite direction. Kamash Malan, that no. If you never left, in other words, the point that the Chachamim assign you the new tchum is only where you actually have lost your original tchum because you went out of it. That's the Chiddush. Reb Shimi Bar Chiya says, look, it's very simple what it means. It means like this. We said that you get a new tchum when you go for purposes of a mitzvah, right? So now all that it's saying is that if the new tchum actually subsumes or overlaps any part of your original tchum, that's what it's saying. So, ima yutichumim shenatnu lo chachamim muvla'im. So they are now subsumed partially, betoch hatchum shelo of your original tchum. Then you can go back to your original tchum and you are not stuck. This is a machlokas aposkim, by the way, achronim. Does it mean you're not stuck, or does it mean you have to go back to your original tchum? That's a machlokas. The Mishnah Berurah is making. So okay, so it's ke'ilu lo yatsa mitchumo. It's as if you never left your tchum, and therefore you get the original 2,000 amos, and that's the Chiddush. That makes much more sense. I mean, you didn't leave the tchum at all. What it means is if you didn't entirely leave your tchum because there's still an ama left that is muvla, so then you're allowed to go back. So what's the machlokas really between Rabba and Rav Shimi over here? So clearly the nafkamina is about this concept of havala'ah. That's exactly the problem, right? So Rabba was saying, look, this question of havala'ah tchumim, I don't know where you get that from. I don't believe that there is a concept called subsuming a tchum. Either this is your tchum or it's not your tchum. So Reb Shimi holds havla'at tchumim is definitely a legal principle. Now, Rashi believes that it is a legal principle that we saw already. Where did we see it already? Well, remember the issue of the guy who had walked out of the tchum and he has to use the bathroom? So we said over there that once he's able to get into his original tchum to use the bathroom, he can then use the entire tchum. So Rashi says, well, I mean, if Rabba holds that there's no such din, then he's obviously arguing on that whole issue that the Nardoi said, if the guy is smart, he'll look for a bathroom back in his original tchum. At that point, nobody said, no, that's not going to help him. So in other words, we took for granted that once he's allowed to re-enter into his own tchum, then he can get the whole tchum back again, right? So if we're going to say over here that there's a machlokas between Reb Shimi and Rabbah about whether that's true, it seems to be that that whole question, which we took for granted, we shouldn't have taken for granted. Tosfos says, no, it's not the same at all, Dinus Tosfos. Because, look, there's a big difference in the original case that we had over there with the Nardoi. Because over there, when he leaves his four amas, he only had four amas, remember, because he had walked out illegally, right? So he only had four amas. And now the question is, can he go to the bathroom? That's all. So Tosfos says like this, are you allowed to leave your four amas to go to the bathroom? Yes. Then you don't have a tchum, correct? In other words, we're going to need to give you a new tchum. Your new tchum is going to be where the bathroom is. Okay, because you already left your tchum entirely. That's a tremendous difference. If we need to give you a new tchum anyway, so when you're back in your own tchum, the Nardoi are saying, okay, so then you get back your old tchum. Anyway, we need to define where your tchum is. Therefore, over there, everybody would agree. That's not because of the concept of Havla'ah. That's because we gave you the right to go back in. The question over here is that there's a tremendous difference if you don't have a contradiction between one tchum and the other tchum. There was no other tchum, right? Okay, so therefore there's not a problem, and you could take it over. And there's no reason for Rabbah here to disagree with that. So Reb Shimi says, even where you've got two separate tchumim, the question over there is, if it's still Havla'ah, so then you can go back into your original tchum. And Rava says, I never heard of such a thing. Lav miltehi. It's not the same as all. Because over here, we don't say that I have to find a different tchum for him. In the case in the Mishnah, he was given a new tchum. What happened to the new tchum? Did somebody take that tchum away from him? No. He still has his new tchum. So who's to tell you that if you have a tchum, that therefore, because there's havlah, you can enter into a different tchum and take the different tchum? Nonsense. The case of the Nardoi, you didn't have any tchum because you left your arba amos, perishus. You needed a bathroom. Okay, so if we're going to give you a tchum, we'll give you this tchum. How do you compare the two cases, Titus Tosfos? Okay, so then what would mean that what Rabbah is saying is that the concept of havlah, when you have competing tchumim, he doesn't hold up. That's all that he's saying. If that's true, and how do you explain? Let me ask you something. You don't hold that Havla'ah's Tchumin is a reality. Let me give you a case, and you tell me how you're going to paskin in this case, all right? You are in a cave at the beginning of Shabbos. You're kena shvisa in that cave. Now, that cave is all surrounded by mechitzas, obviously by definition, and therefore the entire cave is yours, correct? Now, let us imagine that that cave is a very long cave. Okay, so then it's kilometers long. It's 4,000 amas long. It has an entrance on the eastern side of the cave, and it has an entrance on the western side of the cave. Now, above the ground, this cave is basically the bottom of a mountain. Actually, we're calling it a cave. In reality, it's filled with ventilation pipes and so on. They actually called it the Kvish HaMinarot, but you're inside the cave, right? Now, on top of this cave, the walls obviously don't extend straight up. The mountain comes and goes at an angle so that if you would be walking on top of the cave, and literally imagine this is the Kvish HaMinarot, right? It's exactly what you have there. So if you would be walking on top of the cave, you would be walking less than these 4,000 amot on the ground above the cave, correct? Okay. You go out of the door on one side of the cave, and let's say you want to take a walk on the top. Now, when you go out of your door, you're allowed 2,000 amas from your eastern door, and you're allowed 2,000 amas from your western door. The question is, if you've got less than that 4,000 amas on top of the cave, when you come out of the door, if you walk 2,000 amas from your eastern door, you hit one amma of the 2,000 ammas from your western door because of the slope of the mountain, right? Or 10 ammas or 100 ammas, whatever. But there's definitely some overlap. If you take a look at the bottom of the cave, as you can look in your picture in the Rashi over there, the bottom of the cave has allowed you essentially the full area, and then each door has assigned you 2,000 ammas where you're allowed. That's the beginning of your trum. Would you tell the guy that he's not allowed to walk on top of his cave from one door to the other door? So why is he allowed to? I mean, after all, he went out of his makom shvisa, and he's walking from one tchum into another tchum. Now, here I am giving you an amazing case, okay? Because you say if there's competing tchumim, that there's no such thing as overlap. Okay, I am going to create a case of competing tchumim without any of the issues that are associated with what we've been talking about. Leaving your tchum and being assigned a new tchum because of the mitzvah. Very simple. You have competing tchumim because of the geography and topology of where it is that you have been standing, correct? The topography, I mean. So now, are you going to say that he does not have one long tchum on top of the cave? You really hold that he's not allowed to walk on top of the Kvisha Minarot to the other door? It's ridiculous. Umalu Shavat Bemara. Come on, this is beautiful. Beautiful case. I need to create a case where a guy literally has two tchumim. Okay, he's got two doors, and they're 4,000 amas away from each other. Except that on top, they're only 3,999 amas from each other. So there's an overlap, all right? So now, if inside it's Arbat Alafim, but on top, it's a little bit less than Arbat Alafim. So you're telling me that it's not true that lo nimtza mahalach eskula v'chutzal alpayim amma? Isn't he allowed to walk 2,000 amas from either door, right? So then he would be able to move the 2,000 amas, the 4,000 amas on top of the cave. Why? Because of partial overlap and subsuming one tchum in the other, even though they're competing tchumim. Ha! He says, Rabba, well, of course, I am motivated to that case. What does that have to do with what we're talking about? You don't understand that there's a difference between a case where a guy was given two tchumim legally at the beginning of Shabbos, where he was shoves, that over there he defined those tchumim in terms of their avlah at the beginning. What does it have to do with the case over here? Velo shami lecha, you can't think straight. You don't understand there's a difference between hecha shavat ba'avir mechitzot mi ba'od yom, where the guy was there while it was still Friday, right? So that means those two tchumim were defined as one overlapping area because they overlapped. So of course, that's the way I define the tchum. In the case over here, la'echad olo shavat ba'avir mechisot mi'ba'od yom, you were given one tchum, okay? Now that tchum we took away from you and gave you a new tchum. There was no such thing as having two tchumim. They're not two tchumim that come from one makom shvisa. They're alternative tchumim. You went out to do a mitzvah, and then you were given a different tchum. No connection between the first and the second tchum. As far as I'm concerned, first tchum doesn't exist, my friend. Start talking to me about overlapping tchumim where the tchum doesn't exist. The tchum was taken away from him, and now we substitute. Sorry. And now we're substituting a new tchum. So obviously, your case makes no difference to me. Oh, yeah? Says Abaye? Okay. How about the Mishnah? We're going to be having a Mishnah soon, which we already spoke about, and that was the Mishnah about Reb Eliezer. Reb Eliezer says if a guy leaves his tchum by accident, so he wasn't thinking, he finds himself 2 amas or less out of his tchum, he's allowed to walk back in. If he's 3 amas, forget it. He can't walk back in. So let's try to understand what Reb Eliezer is saying, okay? I'm assuming that Reb Eliezer follows his own shita, which we're going to see later on the Mishnah, about how to measure personal space. Does personal space extend as a circle around you? And when we gave you arba amas, doesn't we give you arba amas in every direction? It means there is a moving arba amas with you in the middle of the arba amas, so that you get 2 amas in every direction. Now, otherwise, I mean, where did Reb Eliezer come up with 2 amas? I mean, that's ridiculous. The point is that according to Reb Eliezer, it's always 2 amas from where you are. Okay, so if I walked out 2 amas from the tomb, slightly less perhaps about locus, whether overlap means literal overlap or overlap means just touching. That's a machlokes haposkim. But the question is, if you're only two amas or less outside of the tchum, then you have a slight overlap between the current place where you are, current place, Rabbah, that you didn't have before Shabbos, darn it. And nonetheless, Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed, because of that overlap, you're allowed to go back into your original tchum, which you claim doesn't exist, and you don't have such a thing as overlap. Man, what are you going to do with the mission? Ha! So you see clearly that because of the fact that hu be'emtza'an, since Rabbi Eliezer holds you are in the middle of those four amas, and those four amas, which are now two amas from you, arba amot di'avid le'rabbanon, are now command to move la'im dami. So now they're essentially subsumed, one or the other. And Rabbi Eliezer says, see, that's enough for you to go back into your original tchum. You're telling me havla'at tchumim is nothing. Everybody's talking about it's nothing. Over here, it says, first in the Mishnah, it's something. Says Rabbi Baruch Hanan, I don't understand. You are asking a kasha from Rabbi Eliezer to Rabbah against the Chachamim? What right do you have to ask for Rabbi Eliezer? The Chachamim never said anything about Havla'ah. They don't agree with that Havla'ah. So what are you asking? Says Rabbi, oh yes, I know exactly what I'm doing. Because I heard from Rabbah himself. Don't tell me I can't ask on Rabbah. I heard from Rabbah himself that he said, by the way, the machlokas between the Rabban and Rabbi Eliezer over here is only relevant to a place where a guy left his tchum not as a mitzvah where he was told that he could leave his tchum. But if it would be for a dvar mitzvah, even the Rabban would be motivated to Rabbi Eliezer that there is a havlah. How are you going to explain that now if Rabbi himself says that that Mishnah is based on Havla'ah, and now you're claiming that the machlokas between Rav Shimi and Rabbi is about Havla'ah? Don't argue with me, man. So clearly, there is a problem over here in explaining the basis of the machlokas between Rabbi and Rav Shimi in terms of Havla'ah. Rabbi clearly agrees to Havla'ah. The Mishnah says so. And Rabbi himself says that that Mishnah has bearing even on Liban Rabbanan. In the case of the mitzvah, which is the case we're talking about, exactly what we're talking about. I say that that is not the explanation. So put that in your pipe and smoke it and come up with an explanation.